6:30. Okay, good evening, everybody. So, as always, two questions to choose from. Question number one, I got the following. A balabas who works in jewelry asked me the following. I mean, this is from a fellow rabbi, so he said, that's why he's calling the other guy a balabas. Right, so a balabas who works in jewelry asked the following. He was owed money from a guy in an oriental country. I guess that means the Far East, right? And the guy gave him a gold Buddha doll. The balabas then melted it, because it's gold, and it's worth a lot of money. But I think the halacha is that only the goy can be mevatel the avodah zarah, and I assume it's avodah zarah, so is there any way my friend can now get hanah from it? So that is shaila number one. So as payment for his services, or lack of payment for his services, the guy gave him a gold Buddha doll, and he's melted it down for its value in gold. So is that mutter? Is he allowed to use that? Is he allowed to get any hanah from that? Shaila number two. About an hour before Shabbos, this past Shabbos, I noticed on my phone, I don't know where I was exactly, but I noticed on my phone there were like 7 missed calls from a Rav who I'm very friendly with, who's a little bit younger than me, so sometimes he asks me questions, even though he doesn't really need me to ask questions to. But so I noticed like 7 missed calls. I'm like, oh boy, something must be up. So I called him back, and he said that he had already reached Rav Willig by the time that I called him back. So Baruch Hashem, he called a real rabbi, but he told me what the shaila was anyway, and he said as follows. He said that an alert community member noticed construction going on near one of the parts of the Eruv that they have in his community. So it looked as if the construction might interfere with the Eruv and knock down the Eruv. So he asked the construction worker to please be careful not to knock down that fishing line that you see over there. And the construction worker said, look, I'm going to be working here till midnight tonight. I'll do my best. No promises. And this is Erev Shabbos, like an hour before Shabbos. I'll do my best. No promises. So the rabbi wanted to know, what does he do? Does he have to announce to the community that the Eruv is likely not up? Does he have to check on Shabbos morning to see if it's not up? And if it's not up, then tell everybody somehow on Shabbos morning? What are you doing? Do you say, you know what? Everyone's going to carry anyway. Let's just close our eyes and hope that the construction worker, you know, leaves the Eruv up. So what do you do in that situation? So that is shaila number two. So those are the two shailas. Those are the two options for tonight. So all those who prefer to discuss my melted Buddha, either, I guess, raise your hand and I'll check the Zoom after. Wow. All those who prefer to discuss when an Eruv might have fallen, okay, and some non-votes. I guess some people don't want to talk about anything. Let's see what the, I wonder what the Zoom votes came out. Let's see. The Zoom votes. 2211. Okay, the Zoom is tight, and in the room it's overwhelmingly number two. So okay, so that's what we'll discuss. I guess we'll discuss number two when the Erev might have fallen. So first of all, this is a good topic to talk about. It's good to know a little bit about you know, community Erev. And by a show of hands, how many people regularly rely on a community Erev? Yeah, so it's good to know. You know?
Not now where I live now.
Oh, okay. Where do you live?
Basking Ridge, New Jersey.
And there's no way.
Yeah, they're building a small one, but it's not
going to
reach my house.
Oh, wow. Okay. So if you normally rely on a community Erev, it's good to know. But even if you don't, one day you might live in a community that relies on a community Erev. So there is such a thing called the chazaka, right? Meaning, why is it that you don't have people stationed around the Erev all Shabbos, just making sure that the Erev is up the entirety of Shabbos? And, you know, at best, we check an Erev every Friday by having someone go around the Erev to check. Like, I know where I live in the Five Towns Farakwe area, just the Five Towns Erev is like, oh, I think it's over 14 miles of Erev that they have to check every week. It's a lot of Erev to be on top of. So we rely on a chazaka that if last time we saw it was Bechazkas Kashrus, we assume that it's Bechazkas Kashrus. Question is, what has to happen to ruin a Cheskas Kashrus? So most often what ruins a Cheskas Kashrus of an Erev, or what threatens the Cheskas Kashrus of an Erev, is a storm, right? Usually when there's a major nor'easter, it's on Friday afternoon, right? That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us that little challenge. So Erev in cities tend to be pretty sturdy, meaning in like real cities, they either use actual walls or they use utility lines, which are pretty sturdy, meaning that when the utility companies put up the electric lines, they dafka want them to be very sturdy because they don't want to have the whole, you know, the electricity out in the whole neighborhood every time there's a storm. Erevin in like camps and bungalows and things like that, but if you've ever been to camp for the summer, represent Camp Kaylee Cougar sweatshirt, but if you've ever been to camp for the summer, so Erevin camps are almost always entirely Tzuras HaPesachs with just like flimsy poles and fishing line. So those are much more likely to fall in a storm, especially when you consider the kinds of storms we normally have in camp, right? When it rains a lot here, like in the city, so you go out, you put in, take an umbrella, and it's raining, and you stay dry. You go out in camp when it's raining, like one of those camp storms, like you go out for like a second, like I barely was outside for a second. Why is it like I just like walked out of the shower? Like, why is it like totally like I just fell in a swimming pool? It's like crazy what happens in camp. Plus, in camps, there are a lot of trees all over the place, and trees can threaten an eruv a lot. Now, when trees fall down, if a branch falls on a fishing line, there's a very, you know, a good chance that fishing line does not survive a fallen branch on top of it. So there are storms, depending on which city you live in and what kind of eruv your city has, it would change the calculus on figuring out whether you have a chazaka on your eruv, whether your eruv is good. Like, for example, where I live in North Woodmere, which is just north of Woodmere, the we have like a special cutoff for our eruv from the rest of the five towns. So if the rest of the five towns goes down, we go like this to them, and we still have an eruv that's up because we have a cutoff, and our eruv on three sides is actually wall. We actually have walls on three sides. Why do we have walls on three sides? We're not a gated community because we're surrounded. Our community is surrounded by water, and the municipality doesn't want people drowning and then suing them. So they build fencing around the water. It's very geschmack when there's like a major storm, like a Sandy or an Irene, and then you get like a free mikveh in your basement, you know, because we're surrounded by water. But it's beneficial really for Erevin that we have mechitzas on all sides. There's a little bit of Tzuras HaPesachs on one side, and it's nowhere near trees. It's a pretty safe eruv. But not every place is like that. Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who is one of the experts in eruvin in America, wrote up an article once after Shushan Purim in Tavshin Ayin Ches. There was like a major nor'easter on a Friday, and he said like his phone was ringing off the hook from communities all over the Eastern Seaboard. Can we rely that our eruv is okay? Can we rely on a chazaka? So he said it really depended. He said, for example, in Sharon, Massachusetts, he said that you're from Newton. So he said in Sharon, Massachusetts, the eruv relies in part on utility wires, but it also has a lot of Tzuras HaPesach through heavily wooded areas. So Rabbi Chesis of the Young Israel of Sharon told Rabbi Jachter that Rav Heinemann paskind that if the winds reach 40 miles per hour, then you lost your chazaka on the eruv. Then that's too big of a reyusa on the chazaka to overcome. So it's not necessarily true in every place, but that's a good standard for Sharon, Massachusetts, because the wind can knock down the eruv wire, or it can knock down a tree, which will in turn knock down the eruv wire. So Rabbi Jachter said, he told Rabbi Chesis, you don't have an eruv this Shabbos, meaning that ruins your chazaka, because you have too much can go wrong. On the flip side, in Washington, D.C., in the southern Washington, D.C., they utilize utility wires to create most of the eruv, and has less than a dozen of their own wires throughout the entire city. So the wires are, and all the wires are in non-wooded areas, so that, and they have a history of the fiercest storms, and that eruv being able to withstand the fiercest storms. So that, you could imagine, that you would have a much higher threshold before you ruin the reyusa. So there's no reason to declare the eruv down and puzzle for Shabbos. Rabbi Jachter writes that in Fort Lee, New Jersey, they have a similar type of setup where it was not likely to be down, and Rabbi Zev Goldberg of Fort Lee, New Jersey, was able to adopt the same mahalich of telling people that the eruv is fine. Now, Rabbi Jachter quoted that Rabbi Taubes Shlita suggested in Tinek that since they rely very heavily on electric wires for their Erev, he said, we have a good simon l'davar if our Erev is down. If we have electricity, there's a good chance that our Erev is up, right? So he thought that you could assume that you have a chazaka that it's up if there's still electricity. Now, the opposite is not necessarily true. Rabbi Willig cautions that Meikar Adin, you don't have to assume that the utility wires are down just because your power line is down, meaning that you could follow the rove and the majority of the wires will remain intact throughout any storm. So just because you lost electricity doesn't necessarily mean there's a reyus on your Eruv. It could have been a transformer or whatever. It could have been anything. Or it could have been one wire that was down and it's not an Eruv wire. So it could be that you don't have to. Also, Rabbi Willig is very into, when Rabbi Willig does community Eruvin, he's very into the idea of creating backups and backups to backups, meaning not relying on just eight Tzuras HaPesach, but having as many Tzuras HaPesachs all over the place as he possibly can. He always quotes the Pasuk in Koheles, or the Pesukim in Koheles, Tovim Hashnayim Min HaEchad, and Achud HaMeshula Shlo B'Meheri Yinatek, that if you have, Dafka by Erev, Achud HaMeshula, if you have three strings, then it's Lo B'Meheri Yinatek, then even if one goes down, two goes down, it's good to have all the backups. Where I'm from, like I said, we have walls on three sides, but our Erev is pretty interesting because Rav Shechter doesn't use the five towns, he doesn't use any Erev, but he doesn't hold the five towns Erev is kosher. He's the only rabbi we've ever spoken to that doesn't hold the five towns Erev is kosher. We asked every other major posek about Erev and they all said, yeah, it's perfectly fine. Why does Rav Shechter not like the five towns Erev? Because if you ever visited the five towns, there is a train that goes right through the five towns. It's called the Long Island Railroad. And Rav Shechter holds that a train that goes from city to city is a Rosh Hasharab Daraisa, and you're not allowed to have Rosh Hasharab Daraisa run through the middle of your Eruv. So many years ago, when they realized that no one was really keeping the five towns Eruv in good condition, they decided to bring in Rav Shechter to give a tour of the whole Eruv and to give a list of recommendations of how to make it better. So he came and he gave a list of like 100 things that needed to be fixed, and we were able to fix 99 of them. We were unable to remove the Long Island Railroad from the middle of the... So at the meeting, Rabbi Feitman Shlita, the Rabbi of the Red Shul in the Five Towns, said to Rabbi Shechter, he said, Rabbi Shechter, in Vilna, there was a train that went through the Eruv. And Rav Shechter said, yeah, but they never asked me for Ashkacha on the Erev in Vilna. It was the most Rav Shechter comment ever. He was totally unmoved by that argument. So theoretically, Rav Shechter would hold that my Erev in North Woodmere, where my Erev, I have nothing to do with it, I didn't build it, I don't check it, I don't do anything, but the Erev where I live, where we have a cutoff and we're away from the train, we're good. But anyway, so that has nothing to do with anything. So let's go back to our Shaila. It's not a storm in this case. It's a Nachri that's working right there and telling you that I can't necessarily be careful not to knock down your Eruv. So is that enough of a race on the Chazaka? It's a pretty significant reyus. If he's telling you, you asked him specifically, please don't knock it down, and he said, maybe, So like, can you rely on that? So one thing to realize though is that even if it does go down, that one eitzah you may have is to tell him, look, if it goes down, can you just tie it back up? Because this is not like a thing that has to be done l'shma. A nachri could build the Erev. Building the Erev just means putting up a wall. So we have a halachic wall called the Tzuras HaPesach, where you have a kana mikan, v'kana mikan, v'kana al gabayim. But you can have, if you have a community that's surrounded by walls, nachrim could put up all those walls, that's perfectly fine. To do the box of matzahs and to be konesh visa for everybody, okay, that also nachri could do. Happens to be, you go to the mayor or the governor, or the police chief or whatever, someone who has access to everybody's residence, but to build the walls, for sure, there's no issue. A Nachri's allowed to do it. So maybe you can ask him. In fact, I remember Shachter told us once that he was consulted on an Erev in the community, and when he went to check it out, this was many years ago, when I was in his shir, he told this Maisa. He said when he went to check it out, they introduced him to the Nachri who puts up the Lachis and the Tzuras HaPesach. So they didn't know how to impress upon the Nachri who this rabbi was. So they said, this is Rabbi Herschel Shechter. He is the world's greatest expert in Erevin. And the Nachri said, I beg your pardon. I'm the world's greatest expert on everything. I'm the one that builds all of them. I go up in the cherry picker. I'm the one that puts all of them up. So, you can have a Nachri that puts up an Erev. He's probably not the world's greatest. That guy is probably not the world's greatest expert on Hilchas Erevin. But, so that is a possibility. Normally, the halacha is you're not allowed to ask a Nachri to violate an Isra Daraisa. But the Ramah brings a Bala Itter that Litzorich Mitzvah, you can ask a Nachri to light candles so that you can eat the Shabbos meal in the light. The Ramah writes, don't rely on that Bala Itter, but the Ramah is willing to rely on the Bala Itter B'makom Tzorich Gadol. In the Mishnah Berurah, in Reish Ha'Vav Siv he says that if a neighbor breaks on Shabbos, you could for sure ask a non-Jew to fix it because it's a tzorich rabim. And if it's a tzorich rabim, then you could do and that you could do that. And just l'rav chadimilsa, you could ask him to just tie a bow as opposed to tying a knot. And if he ties a bow, it works just as well. And that why does that help to ask him to tie a bow, not a knot? You ask him to do the rabbanon. It's a shvus to shvus. B'makom tzorech rabim. So for sure you're allowed to do that. There's even a discussion in poskim whether a Jew can repair the erev if it violates bona because he's building a mechitza materas. So the shol lemeishiv in tinyan chelkalv in peites quotes upon a meiros that a Jew actually can repair the erev as long as he doesn't do kosher. The Nesivos HaShabbos, rather, not the Nesivos, the Nesivos HaShabbos, Parag Tosvav, Ha'arah Kuf Aleph, says that it's never permitted, and then there's a discussion, and if a Jew did it, Be'isr, can you rely on it? Right? So, but we would never come to that. We would ask a non-Jew to do it. I mean, there are always non-Jews around, so you'd ask a non-Jew to do it. The question is, do you have to even get there? Meaning, are there heterim, let's say you asked him to do it, but it's the next morning, he's nowhere to be found, and the Erev is down. Right, so by the time you find another Nachri, everyone's going to be carrying their talis into shul. Meaning everyone's going to be... So what do you do now? Is there any heter not to tell everybody immediately? Let's say you know the Erev is down. Must you inform the world as soon as you know that the Erev is down? So Nu, what are you telling me? You have to tell everybody or you don't have to tell everybody? No, everyone's shaking their head no. Why not? They're about to violate an Isser on Shabbos. Why don't you have to tell them? Don't you love Jews? You want to save them from violating an Isser?
You mean they still maybe have an Isser?
They have a... No, you know it's down, though.
Better to be showing than Mazit.
They're doing better that they do shogig than mezid. So one svara is that there is a concept called mutav shu shogin v'alyum mezidin, that if someone is going to do an iser anyway, and it's just a matter of meaning, you're going to tell them it's down. What's going to happen? They're going to carry anyway. If people are going to carry anyway, you'd rather them do it b'shogig rather than do it b'mezid. So that's a sugya maseches beitz on daf lamed. What context does the Gemara say mutav shu shogin v'alyum mezidin in? The context is by women who used to eat right up until Yom Kippur, that they didn't observe Tosefes Yom HaKippur. So the Gemara says we could tell them that there's such a din d'oraisa called Tosefes Yom HaKippur, that they have to be mosif mechal al kodesh. But mutav shu shogin v'alyum mezidin. They're going to continue to do it anyway. So better that they be shogig, not be mezid. That rule, though, only applies if you know that people are not going to listen. In our case, do you know that people are not going to listen? It also doesn't apply to something that's mefurish b'torah, because we assume, of course, it's mezid if it's mefurish b'torah. They know what it says in Chumash. So Tosefes Yom HaKippur is not mefurish b'kra. So Erevin, is Erevin mefurish b'kra? Obviously not, right? It's a... Rabbanan. So it's obviously not Mufurish Bukra. So can you apply Mutav Shishogim Valim Mazidin? So again, Mutav Shishogim Valim Mazidin is only if you know that they're not going to listen. If there's even a chance that they'll listen, then you have to tell them. So what would you say in this case?
Well, might also not be so educated or used to not having an Erev. Might be already walking out things in their pockets.
You might be too late. Okay, Enochinami.
Not able to tell them because you're going to knock on everyone's door before they leave their house.
Let's assume you were able to get the information out to everybody somehow. Let's assume. But would you say that this is a situation where you know that they're not going to listen? So normally, mutav shu shogin v'alyum mezidin is about a person is about to do something. So you have to assess, should I tell that person or should I not? So do I know that they're not going to do something? Over here, what is it? It's a whole city. It's a whole community. How many people live in the community? Whatever. I don't know. Let's say 800 people live in the community. Are they all for sure going to listen? Are they all for sure not going to listen? Are they all suffic? Are some of them surely going to listen? Are some of them surely not going to be? There's someone in every category. They're really from people and the B'nai Torah and B'nai Torah. Of course they're going to listen. Of course they're not going to carry. And then there are people that never even heard that there's such a thing called carrying. I'm reminded, like Rabbi Friend said, he once gave a shiur on Borer, and after he gave the shiur on the halachos of Borer, a woman came over to him and said, "That was a very nice lecture, Rabbi, except you should know something." It was a man, he said. Came over to him and said, "It was a very nice lecture, Rabbi, but you should know something. There's no such thing as Borer." And he said, "What do you mean there's no such thing as Borer?" He said, "I grew up religious, and in my house, we did all these things, so there's no such thing as Borer." So it was nice, like he assumed, like he just like made up this whole construct called, you know, so there will be people that will say, "It was very nice of you to inform us, but there's no such thing as Erev for carrying or anything. You know, there's no Masechta called Erevin. I don't know what you're talking about." So there will be those people, and there will be people that of course are going to listen, and there are a lot of people in between. So do you say that's a case of mitzvah shoshog and vali muzid? Is that a case? Meaning, who has to answer to who, right? Meaning, who gets the upper hand over here? Do you give the upper hand to the people that will listen and want to know, or do you give the upper hand to the people that aren't going to listen and mitzvah shoshog and vali muzid, and therefore don't tell anybody? So the rabbi, for example, said to me, "Look, I don't know what I'm going to do, but one thing I know for sure is that I'm not carrying." He said, "Like now that I know that the Erev is at risk, there's no way I'm gonna carry." But the question is, what about other people? So Shlomo Zalman writes that it's better not to tell people that the Erev is down if you know that some people will carry. Because you know for sure that there are some people that will not listen. That meets the criteria of Mutav Shishogin Vali Mazidin. However, of Moshe, Negros Moshe, or Chaim Chelik Bey, Simon Lamed Vav, strongly disagrees, and he says, of course you have to tell them. You have to give precedence to the people who will listen. And you have to, you have to tell people. In fact, the Magen Avraham, Reish Samuel Kimmel, Simchal Lamed, says that we don't apply Mutav Shishogin in a shul. Why wouldn't you apply Mutav Shishogin in a shul? So Max HaShekel says, because inevitably there will be some people in the shul who take it seriously and will listen. And Mutav Shishogin is only if nobody's going to listen. That's a raya to Rav Meisha Shita. Much of this information, by the way, I got from an article that was written by our very own Rabbi Ezra Schwartz, Rosh Shiva here, and associate director of the Smicha program. So Rabbi Ezra Schwartz wrote an article in 2004 in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society about what you do when the Erev falls on Shabbos. And I remembered that he had written that article not because I know every edition of the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society, but because the article right after his article I wrote. So I remember having seen it because I had that copy. His article is much better than mine. I think mine was on naming babies. I get a lot of attention for that article. Because people like, you write one article on naming babies, and everyone assumes like you're the world's expert on names. So like, you know, people always ask me what to name their kids. I've named more children with Klal Yisrael probably than like Hasidus Sharedus did. You know, like I've, you know. So anyway, that's one argument. So the argument of Mutav Shishogin, subject to Machlokas, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Rav Moshe. Give me another argument not to tell people. So there are two other major arguments not to tell people. One is that there's a comment of Rav Shlomo Kluger, and this is a very, very difficult argument to accept, but we'll say it anyway. Rav Shlomo Kluger in Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, interesting sefer, Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo. Familiar with the sefer? It's a tshuva sefer of Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote a lot. He was a very prolific author, and he wrote long, long tshuvas. And they're beautiful, but they're very, very long. And someone, I never realized this, Rav Shachter told me this, someone came along one day and realized that no one's going to have the patience to read through Rav Shlomo Kluger's long tshuvas, but he says a lot of very valuable and beautiful things. So they took 1,000 of his tshuvas, and they summarized them in one paragraph each, and they put out a sefer called Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, of 1,000 of Rav Shlomo Kluger's summarized tshuvas. So most of the time when you hear Rav Shlomo Kluger quoted, it's from Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, it's from the summarized version. So he writes over there that if let's say you're confident that the Erev was there when Shabbos started, and it only came down after Shabbos started. The rabbi was there watching the Nachri do the work 10 minutes before Shabbos. The Nachri was going to work until midnight. So if it came down after Shabbos started. Or let's say the storm starts or the winds really pick up only at 9 o'clock at night or something after Shabbos started. Right? So then what? So can you rely that the Eruv is okay, even knowing that you have a major reis. So Shlomo Kluger uses a concept that comes up in the Gemara in a different context called Kivan Shehutra Hutra. That Shabbos, Kivan Shehutra Hutra, once it became mutter to carry that Shabbos, you're now allowed to carry the rest of Shabbos. This is a concept that comes up in Maseches Erevin and Daf Ayin Amud Beis. However, that is not so pashut that you can rely on that, Rosh Shlomo Kluger, because while the Gemara does apply that concept of Shabbos, Kivan Shehutra Hutra, that's about the box of matzos. That's not about the mechitzos. Meaning, if the box of matzos, you're familiar, right, with the community Erev, the strings, that's just the walls around the community. But then the actual Eruv is the box of matzos that the whole community shares, right? And that's the joint food of the entire community. So if you have the right as members of community, not you because you don't have it, but you have the right as members of community to know where that box of matzos is. And if you're hungry or you ran out of, you don't have lechem mishnah for shalosh shodes or something, you have the right to like go knocking on a door and saying, I want my matzah. Rav Shechter said that in Washington Heights, there used to be a guy that would do that like every week. They had to get a new box of matzos every week. He used to claim his box of matzos. So you have a right to go claim your matzah if you want. So if the box of matzah disappears on Shabbos because someone eats it, that's when we say kivin shehutra hutra. But if the mechitzos disappear, no one says kivin shehutra hutra. So in fact, Rabbi Jachter writes that Rav Lichtenstein was visiting Talmidim during their military service, and the Talmidim told them that Rav Amital, Zichron Levracha, told them that they could rely on Rav Shlomo Kluger. And Rav Lichtenstein was like stunned. Who you rely on this Rav Shlomo Kluger? It's against Tosfos. It's against, there's a Beferish Tosfos that says in Erev and Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph that Kivan Shehutra Hutra only applies to the Erev Chatzeros. It doesn't apply to the Tzuras HaPesach. It only applies to the Matzos. He was shocked. And he went back to Rav Amital, and he and Rav Amital were very good partners as Rosh Yeshiva in Har Etzion, and they loved and admired each other a great deal. And Rav Amital said that in Europe the minhag was to rely on that kula of Shlomo Kluger. Very hard to accept. I think the minhag nowadays is not to rely on Rav Shlomo Kluger. Not only not to rely on Rav Shlomo Kluger, but one could even say, well, Rav Shlomo Kluger, maybe we're not going to paskin like him, but I don't even know if the Erev fell. So the Erev might be up. So I have a suffix, the Erev might be up. And even if the Erev is down, maybe we pass like Rav Shlomo Kluger. And that's what we call a Sfek Sveika. So maybe I have a Sfek Sveika Lahakel. So Rav Shechter thought that we can't even use him as a Sfek Sveika. Because it's not a suffix. It's a rejected Shita. Similarly, one could argue there is a rule in Hilchas Erevin called Halacha Kedivrei Mekel Be'Erev. We're familiar in Hilchos Avelus, you have such a similar rule. Halachik divrei mekel ba'avel, be'evel, that when it comes to Avelus, there's halachik divrei mekel. So what does that mean exactly? So maybe you could say, halacha is like Rosh Shlomo Kluger, so halachik divrei mekel be'evel. So, or be'erev, rather. So that rule has to have its limitations, right? It can't be that anytime someone comes up with a mekel shita, everyone else says, okay, I retire, I give up, because I can't argue anymore, because halachik divrei mekel, and there's someone that said something that's lekula. It's impossible, right? That can't be how it works. So why don't we say halachik divrei mekel be'eruv over here? So Rav Shechter pointed out that you're not going to say halachik divrei mekel be'eruv when it comes to when it comes to a shita that's rejected. When you have a das yachid, you'll say halachik divrei mekel. I mean, even if it's a yachid against Rambam, but it has to be a das yachid. It has to be a recognized group of yachidim that hold that shita. But when it's one outlier shita that no one else holds, like that, we assume, like Rav Shechter often says, that every posek has like their own one mishagas. They have like their own one. He said it doesn't make you a mishugana to have a mishagas. That's fine. What makes a mishugana is a guy who goes around collecting everyone else's mishagas and making them all his. That makes a person a mishugana. But just because you have one outlier shita, that doesn't make it a das yachid. That makes it a rejected shita. So it's rejected from the halacha. It's not even baba cheshbon. Also, it could be that the klal of halachik divrei mekel be'erev only applies to a machlokas about the box of matzos, not a machlokas about the mechitzos. And it also could be that halachik divrei mekel be'erev only applies to machlokas tanaim or amoraim, not to a machlokas achronim. that we're not going to automatically say Alach Kedivra Mekel Be'eruv. The third and final tzad the hakel is that it might be that carrying, when you're unaware that there's no Eruv, is called Misasek, that it's less than a Shogeg. In fact, there's a very good raya. The Gemara says that if a person is carrying in Rosh Hashanah but he thinks that the place he is a Rosh Hashanah, that's a Misasek. It's less than a Shogeg. So it could be a Misasek, you don't even have to bring a Karban. It's less than a Shogeg. So it could be that a Misasek is not a Maisa Avera at all. And if a Misasek is not a Maisa Avera at all, so people aren't doing anything wrong. As long as they don't know that the Erev is down, they're not even doing something wrong. It's not even an Avera that they don't know about, because it's a Misasek. It's a Machlokas, Rabbi Kivegar, and Rabbi Chaim, whether Misasek is not a Maisa Avera at all, or it is a Maisa Avera, you're just Pater from anything, even from a Karban. But even if you hold that it's a Maisa Avera, it could be that that's only when it comes to Shari Surim. But by Shabbos, where you need Melechas Machsheves, it could be that Misasek is not a Maisa Avera at all when it comes to Shabbos. However, it's very likely that it's at least in a Sidra Abana, meaning it might not be a Maisa Avera on a Daraisa level, but it's probably a Maisa Avera on a Derabanan level. So in this case, just to close it up over here, what happened? So the guy, by the time I called the rabbi back, the rabbi said, I'm in the bank already. I'm like, what are you doing in the bank? He said, because Rabbi Willard told me that I should go right to the bank, get some cash, go back to the construction worker, give him a couple $100 and say, there's a couple $100 in it for you if you leave the Erev up. And maybe that would create a little more of a chazaka that he's gonna leave the Erev up. And then Rabbi Willard said, but still, afal pikein, you have to go back the next morning to check and make sure that it's up. And if it's not up, you have to go to every single shul in the neighborhood, walk around to every shul in the neighborhood and inform them and let them know, let all their membership know. I mean, Rabbi Willig was not willing to be Samech Rav Shlomo Kluger, that's obvious, no one would be, except for Rav Amital. Rav Willig was not willing to be Samech on Mutav Shushogin Valium Mazidin, because he holds like Rav Moshe, and Rav Willig was not willing to be Samech on Misasek, because he holds it is a Maisa Isser of some sort, even if it's only Draban, it's some sort of Maisa Isser when it's a Misasek, and therefore you do have to let everybody know. That's what Rabbi Willard thought. I thought, if you weren't even sure that it was down, you said somebody sniffed malakal. Or some Zalman held that Mutzav Shiyushogin applies over here. Plus, over here, you don't even know that it's down. So that's a Svek Sveika. You don't want to use Rosh Hashanah Kluger for a Svek Sveika. At least use Rosh Hashanah Zalman for a Svek Sveika. So I thought that would be enough for a Svek Sveika. But I like the idea of bribing the guy. I thought that was a good idea. So just as a P.S., after Shabbos, the rabbi texted me, Shavua Tov, Rabbi. I actually walked today because I wanted to see if the line was still there and up. And Baruch Hashem, it was still up. I guess they were actually careful. Thanks again for all the help. Whatever. I didn't help him at all. He helped me. He gave me a whole shiur to give. But the Agav, he also told me that in the end of the day, they didn't need any of this because there was a fence right there. And the fence was normally a little too short to count because it was 31 inches, which is not really 10 tefachim. But if you go with the smaller sheet of a tefach, it might count as 10 tefachim. And Rabbi Willig was willing to be making on that considering the circumstances, even if it went down. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos. I apologize that I have to run. I have a shiur that I got to give on Zoom at 8:05 upstairs in my office. So my apologies. Really great to see everybody. And have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you.